Good morning, everybody. I'm honored that Assemblymember Phil Ting, here with me today, chose to highlight our office and our region, the San Diego County District Attorney, as an example of effectively implementing a groundbreaking law that he was responsible to pass this year in our state. The new law allows local prosecutors to carefully review old cases in which we believe the prison terms were unjustly harsh. If warranted, prosecutors can recommend a new reduced sentence to the judge who has the final say. Prior to the change in the law, only the Board of Parole Hearings or the California Corrections Secretary could initiate and recommend resentencing of a defendant. Our team's mission at the San Diego District Attorney's Office is to pursue a fair and equal justice for all. That includes making sure that sentences are not disproportionate with the crime and that they are fair. This new law gave us the legal tool to carry out criminal justice reform that is fair and balanced, while maintaining the safety of the community and with respect to victims of crime. Today is an example of that. In 2003, Kent Williams burglarized two North Park homes and stole a car. He was convicted of the crimes, and because he had prior strikes for burglaries, he fell under California's three strikes law, which was in effect at that time, and a judge sentenced him to 50 years in prison to life. To compare this, this would be the same sentence today for murder using a weapon. Mr. Williams, with the support of his family and community, including Bishop Cornelius Bowser, who is here today, requested that we review the case. Our thorough review included his criminal history with an eye towards physical violence, his conduct while in prison, his preparation and plans to deal with addiction, substance abuse, and criminality, his pursuit of educational goals, and a risk assessment for future violence and criminality. After we completed the review, we believed Mr. Williams met the letter and the spirit of the law, and that he was deserving of this relief. In May of this year, our office filed a motion for resentencing, which was granted by a judge. We believe Mr. Williams is the first person in our state of California to benefit from AB 2942, which is now law under Penal Code Section 1170D. This new law was thankfully authored by Assemblymember Phil Ting. As a result, Mr. Williams became a free man after being incarcerated for 16 years. The resentencing effectively shaved 33 years off Mr. Williams' prison term. Proactively bringing this resentencing to a judge was the right thing to do. Ultimately, we believe the circumstances had changed since the defendant's original sentence. He had moved forward with his life, and we even received a letter from a correctional officer about his behavior that was positive while in prison. This new law is in the interests of justice, and we are proud to carry it out. I want to thank Chief Deputy DA Dwayne Woodley, who is here today, and Deputy District Attorney Matt Greco for taking the laboring oar in this petition and process. Being the first meant they had to find their way and create the form and the petition from scratch. I'm proud to call on Assemblymember Ting. I'm so proud that he's joined us today in San Diego County. Assemblymember.
Thank you, Madam District Attorney. Let me just thank you and your office for being the first in the state to use AB 2942. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it for really leading the way and setting the example. I also wanted to thank Hillary Blout, who I'll be introducing later today with For the People, who really was the main architect of this legislation and created the vision of this. As of right now in California, our state spends $12 billion a year for our corrections department to house about 115,000 people in our state. Just by comparison, the entire budget for UC and CSU that we give is only $16 billion. And that's for every UC and every CSU across the state. Our criminal justice system is not working the way it should be. It's not always protecting us. It's not always serving us. And given that level of expenditure, I would be proud if all 115,000 of those folks could come out and actually have a better life, actually have learned from what happened, actually be rehabilitated, which is what the department is. It's corrections and rehabilitation. Unfortunately, we haven't done as good a job in that realm as we could have. And so I was so proud when Ms. Blout came to me to author AB 2942 to give people a second chance. And the reason we thought this legislation was the right way to go is it didn't take power away from the district attorneys. It didn't take power away from the judges. It actually empowered. It empowered the people who are working in our criminal justice system every single day. They're in court every single day fighting for the people. And for this idea was so simple that we allowed the district attorney to revisit cases that her office believe should be revisited. We didn't force anyone to do anything, and we didn't force the judge to do it. There was nothing overly prescriptive outside of some of the things that you looked at. So we didn't say you should look at these sentences or not. The bill in and of itself was actually rather simple in that way. But I'm so proud that this district attorney has taken the lead in our state and really been the first across the state. And I'm hoping that other district attorneys will really follow, because I know that we have so many folks in our correction system who are serving time that is excessive, that they have sentences that they wouldn't have if they were convicted today. They were convicted under a different time. They were convicted during a different period when our state really believed that the longer we put people away, the better it is for our society, the safer it is. And I think what we've learned is that isn't always the case. And in fact, many folks, just like we would hope, we would get, many people really deserve that second chance. And it's that second chance that is being looked at by a prosecutor, by a judge. So it's not just, hey, trust me, you know, we know we did wrong, but we can do better. It is really the people who are entrusted with this decision are the people we entrust with this decision every single day. It's our prosecutors up and down the state, and it's our judges up and down the state. And so that's why I'm so proud that this office took the lead. I'm also incredibly proud of Mr. Williams and his fortitude and really telling his story. I'm not going to really go through his story because I think he is the most powerful messenger that is possible, but I am just, it is very humbling and very honored to really be here today. Oftentimes when you do legislation, you always wonder, who's it going to impact? Whose life is it going to change? So the fact that this changed Mr. Williams' life, his family's life, really makes it incredibly worth it. So thank you. So with that, Mr. Williams.
Well, first of all, glad to be here today. So happy. I want to thank District Attorney Summer Steppens and the District Attorney's Office, you know, and I want to thank Hillary Blount for creating this bill that gave me an opportunity to be with my family again. I have to be honest with you, it wasn't easy. It's been a long road. A lot of sacrifices have been made. My wife stood with me. She's standing right here. I have my daughter here standing with me. I have my son in the room. Relationships have been restored. I hadn't seen my daughter in 26 years. And now I have a daughter. I have five grandchildren. My son has two sons, and relationships are being restored. Restoration has been in a great part of this. I also want to thank Bishop Cornelius Bowser for believing in me. He's been trying to help me and, you know, to get through this process. And a little bit nervous, excuse me. But being in prison, you know, it's not a good thing. You know, but what I was able to learn, you know, during that time was that if you do the work, you know, I think the word I'm looking for is altruism. One of the classes that I took, ethics classes that I took, was doing the right thing when nobody else is looking. You know, I kind of probably looked at like a clown up in there because everything's going 90 miles an hour in that direction, and I'm going the other direction as far as the drugs are concerned and all the things that go on in prison. But I guess after a while, you know, people look at your persona and they look at you every day and see what you're doing. As time went on, it was respected down through the way. I'm working on 15 years sobriety, drug-free. I thank God for that. And, you know, the groups, the ARC program, which is recidivism, they deal with recidivism and also Criminal Gangs Anonymous and different groups like that, NA, AA, and mentoring groups and different things like that helped me out along the way. I had to go back and look at impulsivity and some of the things that caused me to keep coming back to prison in the first place, and drugs played a big part in that. I had to make a quality decision. Did I want to die in prison? That's what it basically boiled down to. And the decision that I made, it was by divine intervention. And I guess I had an encounter with God, you could say that. And that changed my life. I remember the three-strike law had came out, and they were trying to repeal it in 2004, and it didn't happen. It almost happened. And I kind of like lost hope. It was really hard then, and kind of got off track just a little bit. But, you know, by the grace of God, I was able to get back on track. And the Lord would always send people in my life, like Bishop Bowser. My wife was there the whole time. She didn't miss a beat. And she was probably my strongest hope. And when everybody else said he's never getting out and just, you know, they basically just put the nails in the coffin, they were just pretty much through. Not that I was a bad guy or anything. It was just like, he's in there. He's never getting out. And then all of a sudden, the doors start opening, you know, from just doing the right thing when nobody else is looking. And you're looking at a grateful man here today. You know, I it's so surreal. I've been out almost 60 days now. I'm on full-time employment, and I'm registered for college. I have my kids in my life. I have my God in my life. I have my wife in my life. And I just want to tell everybody that's looking at this now, the guys that are still on the inside that know me, that are out there in Donovan, because that's the yard that I parole from, man, that you know that, you know, God is real. And if you do the right thing, if you do the work, don't look at if I get out or not. My thing was, God, if I never get out, I'm going to continue to mentor the youth up in here and continue to do the right thing if I never get out. And I think when I made that statement, that's when the doors started opening, because it's like I was putting out a fleece or anything. God, if you do this for me, then I'll do this for you. No, it was the quality of life that I choose to live while on the inside, in spite of what everybody else is doing. So I'm here to say that if you can continue to do the right thing when nobody's looking, regardless of what everybody else is saying, just continue to do the right thing. Do the groups, do the work, you know, respect the authority. And I honestly believe that doors will open for everybody that's listening to me right now. I'm a grateful man. You know, I love you brothers that are still in there. And you're looking at a miracle. You're looking at a miracle standing here. If God did it for me, then he can do it for you too. It's almost like I'm preaching, huh? I feel very, very good. And I'm just honored here today. All these wonderful people, you know, I was a blessed man because I had a lot of support along the way. A lot of men in there, it's difficult. They don't have the support system that I have. But even with that support system, you still have to make a decision within yourself. You know, going back and going through those groups, and even without the drug addiction, I had to go back and find out why I did drugs in the first place. And that's what the Department of Correction Rehabilitation had actually taught me. To go back, they're not going to force you to do these groups. This is something that you have to do, and it's almost like you have to just separate yourself mentally. You can't isolate yourself from anybody. You can't do that because you still have to coexist with these men and be an example at the same time. So I'm a grateful man today, And I just want to thank everybody again, the media, you know, for giving me this opportunity to speak and spread my message. And I'm looking forward to doing it and making amends for the rest of my life. That's how I'm able to give back, is just make amends. How do you do that? You just do the right thing. That's all you do. You do the right thing when nobody's looking. And I just want to thank you again and my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for giving me this opportunity to stand here in front of you today. God bless you.
Okay. At this time, as I mentioned, Bishop Cornelius Bowser brought this case to our attention. He had met Mr. Williams and was impressed with his will to live a good life outside of prison. And so I'd like to call on Bishop Bowser to say a few words.
What a beautiful day. I've been to a lot of press conferences, but this is the most moving that I've been a part of. And I'm thankful and grateful to God for Kent Williams being released. I want to thank God for Assembly Member Ting, Healy Blount, who wrote the bill, District Attorney Summer Steffens, and appointing Chief Deputy District Attorney Woodley, and then Prosecutor Matt, who actually presented it to the judge. Thank God for the judge, too. You know, because what I've seen in this process, I saw how criminal justice reform really works. And when everybody can come together and agree on something. And I saw it was so smoothly. I was always told, you know, when you're picking fruit from the tree, if it's ripe, you don't have to yank it. And this was something that was not forced on anyone. It perfectly worked. And I believe that this could be the beginning of something great. And that's what we're looking for and hoping for, is that many other prosecutors will and district attorneys will take the lead from our great district attorney, Summer Steffens, and do the same thing. So I'm grateful and I'm thankful for all of you that was a part of this process. And let's move forward and let's make some great things happen.
Thank you. So it's really my honor to introduce Healy Blount with For the People. As you can probably understand, every year I get approached with many great ideas that could be laws or could be bills. And I'll tell you, most of them you hear, and everyone loves their idea. They have great ideas. You know, we have hundreds and hundreds, and my staff knows hundreds and hundreds of ideas. So every time I hear, do I have a bill for you, I'm always a little bit skeptical. It's sort of it's the administrator in me, because I used to be the former assessor, so always hearing something. But, you know, when Healy came to me, she was so excited about this bill. She's a former prosecutor, so she wrote it with that prosecutor's mindset. And really, what would a prosecutor need to revisit a case? What would a judge need? Because she's been in front of judges. She's also been working for a nonprofit advocacy organization working on reform for many years. So she also had that lens. And so we had this unique confluence. I think the bishop put it well. This was definitely a ripe piece of fruit that needed to get picked. And she was the right person at the right time that really wrote it. And one of the reasons that I decided to carry this bill was, frankly, because this bill was simple in its process. It allowed the district attorney, allowed the judge just to take a second look and say, hey, let's just take a second look at this person and see if this person really should get a second chance. And so with that, Healy Blount.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Healy Blount, as the Assembly member said, and I am the founder and the executive director of For the People. And we run the Sentence Review Project, which is a project that is leading implementation of AB 2942, the law that's been discussed here, the law that was used by the DA in Mr. Williams' case. And there's been sort of the technical definition of what it is. Really what it is it gives DAs the opportunity to reconsider whether the decisions that they made are really in the best interest of community safety, public safety, and in the best interest of their constituents. We know, and research supports this, that there are hundreds of thousands of people in prison across this country that don't need to be there. By that, I mean that they have done a crime, they've done the time, and that they do not pose a public safety risk. But without any kind of intervention, they will remain in prison. And keeping folks in prison isn't free. And guess who pays to keep them in prison? We do. In California, we pay $80,000 a year to house somebody in prison for 1 year. That doesn't even capture what we would spend if there wasn't an intervention in Mr. Williams' case. He was sentenced to serve life. That means that if DA Steffens and the rest of her incredible team hadn't used this law and intervened, we would be spending over $1 million to house somebody like Mr. Williams in prison, unnecessarily and for what? So we work with, my organization works with prosecutors, and we work with all prosecutors across the political spectrum. I say that because there's been a lot of talk in the media about reform prosecutors or conservative prosecutors, but the point of the matter is that when we worked on this bill and I talked to prosecutors across the state, I said, let's put the identity politics aside. Do you believe that there's people in prison that don't need to be there? Every prosecutor said, well, of course. Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody. When I asked the question, have you ever prosecuted a case where somebody was given an offer, but they decided to go to trial anyway, and you thought, oh, why did you do that? That you wish that they would have taken the deal that you offered. DAs across the state said, yeah. When I asked the question, is there a case that you can think about that you feel bad about, have any regrets? Well, not a lot of DAs would say yes to that, but some did. And I know myself personally, I do have some regrets about the way that I handled cases in court. Not that I wasn't following the law, but that I didn't really ever consider what would happen to a person after they were sentenced. So as Assemblymember Ting said, I'm a former prosecutor. If you would have asked me 5 years ago, would I be standing up here today talking about an organization that I'm running to work with DAs to implement reform policies, I would have said you were crazy, just crazy. But when I started to go into prisons and I started to talk to people and I started to learn about what was happening to folks when they were sent away, that there really wasn't a robust parole board that was using their platform and using their tools to get people out of prison that deserved to come home, that we had so many barriers for people with formerly incarcerated people that we were actually making it more difficult for them to reintegrate into our society, thereby causing a public safety issue, I knew that as prosecutors, we could be doing our job differently. So again, I work with prosecutors across the state, those that agree that there are people in prison that don't need to be there, those that agree that there are people in prison that may have turned their life around much more quickly than we thought they would have done when we stood up in court and sought that sentence. That prosecutors that believe that there are people that actually, if they were on the outside, like Mr. Williams, could be an ally in our effort to make our community safer, that they could interrupt cycles of violence, they could interrupt cycles of poverty, that they could contribute to their families, whether financially or in Mr. Williams' case, helping his daughter and son raise their children. So Mr. Williams' case is incredible. You heard it. I think that there's other articles that are going to be coming out about his incredible arc of rehabilitation and all the things he was able to do, how he was able to confront and wrestle the demons of his addiction, that he was able to turn his life around and continue on that path, even though he lost both of his parents while he was incarcerated. As he said, he kept doing the right thing even when nobody was watching and maybe in those moments where it didn't feel like it was even worth it. But I'll say this, while Mr. Williams is incredible, he's not the only one. There are so many other people like Mr. Williams in our prison today in California that deserve to come home. So we are thrilled to be here working hopefully in the future with the DA's office here and DAs across the state. And hopefully other states in the country are going to follow suit. So thank you again. And we look forward to bringing you more folks like Mr. Williams to tell their redemption stories and help them to claim their freedom.
Thank you. So this concludes the conference. If you have questions, this is the time. Yes, Assemblymember Tang.
Yes. You mentioned in your release that 25% of the incarcerated population can be coming out as just following. Do you see any, or foresee something like cases like Mr. Williams to become part of a prevention program instead of spending all that money with the people in prison? As you mentioned, 25% across the board without a negative effect on public safety could be released. Can be that the meaning for the next project for the state?
Well, I think what we wanted to do with 2942 was take a very significant step in that direction. We'll be taking a look at other pieces of legislation. I have another piece of legislation, AB 1076, that I am carrying right now, which is looking at expunging records for people who've been arrested as well as people who have served their time. And that's a bill that I'm working on with my district attorney, George Gascon. And that legislation is for people who've already serve their time and have their records, need their records cleared. And again, what we see is even after you're out, even for Mr. Williams, even after he's out, it's still, if he doesn't have a stable family environment to go back to, it's hard to find work. It's hard to find housing because just having that arrest record really colors how people look at you. So again, there's so many different facets within the system that we need to take a look at. I mentioned earlier one of the areas that we spend money on but still haven't done a great job of, and is really doing rehabilitation. We don't do a great job doing rehabilitation. I was really pleased to hear about Mr. Williams and the classes that he was taking and that it had an impact. That's something that we're constantly trying to get feedback on and how we are doing with rehabilitation. I'm okay with spending more money in the system if we get a better result. Right now, we seem to be spending more and more money and not getting much of a result at all, and that's what I'm concerned about.
Other questions?
Yeah. One of the prosecutors, maybe. Who was the judge who did the original sentence and then the resentencing?
It was the same judge that did the resentencing because, you know, we wanted it to be transparent. Judge Hartounian.
Individual committed the same offenses as Mr. Williams today and was sentenced, what kind of sentence would that person draw?
You know, it is a case by case. You'd have to look at their criminal history, the type of burglary it was. So there is a range, but generally speaking, this sentence of 50 years to life is not the type of sentence that we would give today to someone with a Mr. Williams' criminal history. He had no criminal history of actual physical violence or it was really addiction-driven residential burglaries, which are very serious because, you know, people can't go back to their homes when those things happen. We're not trying to diminish it. But his particular type of record and crime would not be 50 to life today.
What would be the process now if, you know, I'm sure there are people who will be watching who say, I can see a case in my family of my friends. How does someone actually get this to your desk to have it relooked?
We, on our website, sandiegoda.com, there is a resentencing button that tells people the process by which to contact our office so that we can take a close look at their case.
I want to ask Mr. Williams, who I am so impressed with, you've spoken so powerfully and so eloquently. You said at one point in your remarks that you thought that you might die in prison. And did you ever at some point, I mean, obviously you defied that, but was that a cause for a lot of bitterness at some point?
At some point, yeah. It caused a lot of bitterness, a lot of things that I didn't understand, you know, at one point, especially when in 2004, I believe it was, they tried to repeal it. I think it was Proposition 66, and it failed. And my dad passed away right after that. That was a very dark moment for me because I said, well, you know, my kids weren't in my life. And I said, well, my son was. My daughter wasn't. And I was like, well, I'm never going to get out. I might as well just go out with a bang, you know, just find all the drugs I can get and just do them and leave. And then I had that divine intervention And that was something that just turned my life, just immediately turned it around, that let me know that I still had value. And, you know, and while I was in there, you know, I'm a musician, you know, I was doing concerts and stuff in there, and lives were being touched and stuff like that. So I knew that God just wasn't just done with me yet. And at that moment, that was almost 15 years ago. That was the epiphany in my life that turned everything all around while I was in there, because the drugs were still there. You know, the drugs were still there. Everything was still there. The gang culture, everything is still in there. But that voice that spoke to me was what turned it around. And that was, and I know that was divine intervention. And at that point, I knew I wouldn't die. I didn't know I was going to have to do 15 more years, but I knew that something was going to happen, you know, to get me out of prison. This is before this assembly bill came and before anything, you know. I've seen people get out, you know, I'm praying for everybody and people are getting out and, you know, lifers and different things are going to the board and getting out. And with the type of sentence that I had, I couldn't even go to the board for 25 years. You know, little voices would speak to me, you didn't kill anybody, why are you doing this much time? You know what I'm saying? But like I told the judge when he recalled my sentence, I actually thanked him for the time that he gave me. Yeah, I said, look, you know, thank you for the time that you've given me, because if you wouldn't have given me that time, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I told him every year, every second, every moment was necessary to get me to this point here. And a lot of people would probably disagree with that. You know, they would say it was too much time. It wasn't too much time for me. It was just enough time and not too much time. And you're looking at a miracle. You're looking at the result of a lot of hard work and a lot of faith that kept me laser focused for those last 15 years.
What are you doing now?
Right now, well, I'm registered for school for fall, and I'm working full time. I have a job. I'm able to help my wife with bills and things like that. The transition, in general, for me, it really wasn't that difficult because I prepared myself before I came out. You know, the last few years were just, you know, preparation. Like I said, these self-help groups that you go into and you get involved. And I think for me, what helped me out a lot, because I was able to pour into people's lives, the young people in there, not just young, but old too, even some of the COs, even some of them, you know, God has just blessed me in that way to be able to always have an encouraging word or something like that for somebody. So I believe when I did that he poured back into me, you know, and just, you know, like this, every day wasn't good. You know, I didn't have any thoughts of going back to drugs or anything like that. But most of my thoughts were not in prison. They were outside of prison. My grandkids, my son, my daughter, my wife, brothers and sisters that I haven't seen in a long, long time. I have my sister and her husband are both in law enforcement. So they looked at this in a whole different angle. I have them back in my life 100%. You know, and they're like, well, if you didn't have any record, you would be working for law enforcement. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. But other doors are opening up for me. And I'm just happy today. I'm very happy. Thank you.
Maybe someone's again. Can you clarify the situation with the 3 strikes you're out, actually, right now? And how has this been the first? It's going to be as president, as you mentioned, on the future cases for the rest of the district attorneys in the state of California.
The 3 strikes law changed where many of the offenses that used to be 3 strikes are not qualifying for 3 strikes. So that law did change, but it did not help Mr. Williams' case because of the technical charge, which was a hot prowl burglary. So because it didn't fit this particular situation, the 3 strikes relief that we granted many, many people when the law changed, our office did that to everyone who qualified, didn't help Mr. Williams. It took Assemblymember Ting's law that allowed that discretion to not look at the technicalities of that law, but look at the overall picture of the person's history. The way the law is written is brilliant. It allows you to really balance safety with the risks. There's always risks, but you can look at how somebody performed while they're in prison, their disciplinary history. We were able to get a consent form from Mr. Williams to look at his behavior in prison. So it gave us the confidence to know that we are correctly balancing public safety with the dignity and value of Mr. Williams' life and his family's life. So that's why we were very thankful the way the law is written really has good sense and common sense and things that that would benefit the community.
Would be a precedent?
Pardon me?
Would be a precedent?
Well, when we did this case, we certainly didn't know we were the first. We just looked at it as what's the right thing to do, but we learned later that it was the first in the state. So somebody has to be first, and I think we're setting a good example. And you can see from Mr. Williams that I think he's the right person, and hopefully other cases will follow and other prosecutors.
Can I ask, Ms. Blount, you remarked something about the parole board, the robust nature or lack of robust opportunities for inmates to have a second chance. Can you address that a little bit? I mean, some people might say, well, why do we need this law? There's the parole board. They should be able to reevaluate and review.
Yeah.
Why do we need this?
Yeah. So it was mentioned earlier, but in Mr. Williams' case, I think he said it himself, in his case, he was not even eligible to go to the parole board for several decades. So there are several people that are in prison that don't even have the option to see the parole board. I won't get into too much about the misgivings of the way that the parole board is operating and the improvements that can be happening there. But I will just say that we have 115,000 people in prison. We have a issue at hand that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed by everybody that's part of the criminal justice system. And so the fact that we, before this law, had no way for DAs to be able to get involved with addressing mass incarceration, excessive sentences, that's what I was mentioning before, is that we need to have tools available so that there are other ways for other actors in the criminal justice system to be able to provide redress for people who are unjustly confined.
Are there any other states that have similar avenues to do this?
Not that I know of. My understanding is that there are a couple other states. There are a couple other DAs in some of the other states that have workarounds. They are trying to figure out ways to do what we've done here. We're fortunate, though, that we have a legislature and we have leadership like Assemblymember Ting and a governor that's supportive and was supportive of a law like this. But to my knowledge, I don't believe that there is another direct vehicle, a legal vehicle like this in any other state that allows a DA to reconsider their own sentences and bring it to the court.
First case, so to speak?
This was the first case.
I'm saying, did you look at other case files before you landed on Mr. Williams to push forth as the first case under this law?
No, he was the first case we looked at, and the reason is this case was brought to us last year before the law became the law, and while we wanted to find a way to do justice in that case, there was no legal mechanism. And so as soon as the law passed, then we reopened Mr. Williams' case to look at it. So it was the first. And thanks to the assembly member for giving us the law, because we have to implement the law. The law is very important that we follow it. So it gave us the ability to do justice.
Mr. Ting, do you have any critiques of the present parole system?
I think, again, it's a board that is really set up not to do what they say, which is to parole people. It's really a parole board that's really keeping people in the system. And I think given the high cost of incarceration to the taxpayers, I do think we have to take a closer look at that board and really how it's working.
you have other people on foot, to, like in the mill, to be next?
We're reviewing several other cases, but I can't tell you anything right now. We're in the review process.
Is the hot problem that there were people present in the residence at the time?
Yes, and we, of course, complied with our Marcy's Law and contacted the victims, so there's no surprises, and we respect the system and everyone's rights, the defendant's rights and the victim's rights.
And what was the response of the victims when they heard about the release?
They thought based on, they trusted our review and our evaluation. Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.
Mrs. Williams, want to speak to us?
I just wanted to begin.
I stood by his side. I'm happy.
Mr. Williams,
yes, ma'am.
What was your age when you entered the prison?
Well, 42.
Mm-hmm, 42.
And based on your, you know, eloquence, would you consider becoming a minister?
If that's what God wants me to do, yeah. That's pretty much what I was doing in there. You know, just different types of, there's different types of ministries, but most definitely, yeah. That's definitely, I mean, there is a reason why he released me. There's a reason why the DA, district attorney's office, and this bill came about. You know, if you really look at it that way, there's I believe there's a purpose in that, and I think that's part of it. This is just the beginning, and spread the message. Spread hope, and not just former inmates. Just there might be people in this room that need to be ministered to. Yeah.
You have a good family, and you're a good-looking man.
Thank you, sir.
Oh boy, that's a new one.
Thank you.